you've overestimated just a little bit, but math is hard.
Math is hard. So's talking. It's the Deseret News Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 291. I am your host, Adam Mangum. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout. Subscribe to us on iTunes and check out this podcast and other great shows at deseretnews.com/podcasts. In this episode, Matt and I preview the Portland State game, and we predict the entire season. We break down what Francis Bernard's departure may mean for the BYU defense. But before any of that, I interview SB Nation's Matt Brown. He tells us his expectations for BYU and who he thinks the contenders are for the college football playoff. My first question to Matt is about BYU's schedule and whether he thinks this is good or bad for the Cougars.
I think it's a great schedule. One thing that I think BYU is very smart to do, and I'm not sure they probably tried to do this other years, is to have a warm-up game before you really get into the throes of everything. And you know, maybe a little bit cynically, if players get suspended or if they get injured in camp, it's nice to have 1 week first before you get into the biggest games here of your season. And, you know, it gives BYU a chance to kind of work out a couple of things, since it seems like there's a couple of question marks on the offensive side of the ball. Getting a couple of live game reps, even if it's against an FCS team, I think is useful. And then you've got several really talented, exciting teams right at the beginning of the year. And for the first time in a while, a couple of them are coming to Provo. So, there's some big names. I think BYU's like offensive line and their running game will be tested very significantly in the beginning of the year, because LSU, Utah, and Wisconsin all have really excellent defensive fronts. And you want to make sure that you don't get too physically banged up there, because even the October schedule, which might not have quite as many like big names, are still going to feature a lot of teams that are going to be in the top 50 and are very capable of beating you if you're ground down a little bit. So I think, given the context of what BYU has to deal with structurally when scheduling, I think fans should be really quite pleased with this. There should be a lot of good football games.
Yeah, for sure. So as you look at that first group of three, LSU, Utah, and Wisconsin, obviously the LSU and Wisconsin game stands out, both of those games down a neutral game, as well as you mentioned, a Power 5 team coming to Provo, which is not as common. If you look at those two teams, I think obviously LSU nationally, SEC, better name recognition, all that kind of stuff. Do you have a team? I know you're a little bit of a Big Ten homer like myself. Is it reasonable to think right now that the tougher game is actually the Badgers versus LSU?
I completely agree. I'm actually glad you mentioned that. I think that's what I was going to say. It's useful with that game. Is at home, playing in Provo, I think, is a really significant home field advantage, especially if somebody has to travel 2,000 miles away. But Wisconsin's a more complete team than LSU. You know, it's funny, LSU, Utah, and Wisconsin, I think, all have some similarities. They have very strong defensive lines. Wisconsin isn't a team that recruits nearly as well as LSU, so the raw athleticism isn't there. But, I think like BYU, they do a very good job of recruiting to a particular scheme, and their player development, even over a series of different defensive coordinators, has been excellent. Now, this was a unit last year that dealt with a ton of injuries, and we were replacing some of those linebackers, some of those defensive backs with two-star kids, like with walk-ons, and they were still playing at a very high level. So you're going to have that level of defense, even though Wisconsin just lost one of their best linebackers of the season for the ACL tear. Like BYU, there's some depth there. But I think the difference between Wisconsin, Utah, and LSU is the Badgers are a little bit more balanced offensively. Like, this is never a especially explosive group, especially through the passing game, but they're returning most of everybody from last year's squad. I liked Alex Hornibrook a lot, their quarterback, although he showed a couple of questionable throws judgment-wise, which you're going to expect with a young quarterback, but they have a little bit more pop, I think, with their perimeter and their wideouts, their skill position players, their H-backs, than Wisconsin has typically had. Like, I think that's a top 15 minimum caliber team, and it will be difficult, although not impossible. It will be difficult for BYU to beat them.
So let's talk a little bit about on the Cougars' side. Obviously, the elder statesman Taysom Hill is now playing at least preseason NFL football. Jamal Williams, the two key components for the last, it seems like, decade at BYU, yeah, on the offensive side are gone. Tanner Mangum finally gets his unencumbered shot, and also in probably a better offense than him than the one that Robert and I ran at the end of his tenure. What do you expect as a national observer from Tanner Mangum? Is he somebody that's on your radar as a top 25 QB, or is it kind of a more of a wait and see what he does in the Ty Detmer offense?
So I think pretty highly of Mangum personally. I do think that his ceiling is probably top 20 quarterback nationally. You know, even the limited action that we've seen him over the last 2 years, I think it's very clear that he has a plus arm. He has the physical frame and attributes that you would expect from a high level pocket passer kind of quarterback. He's, you know, as a recruit, he was very well regarded, did very well at Elite 11. I think he'd probably start for about half, maybe more of power conference teams. The question mark for me is more about what happens with the rest of BYU's offense. Like, I think that there's some reason to be optimistic about the offensive line, particularly. I think there's some improved depth. I imagine you're going to be looking to play more than five individuals there. You have some experience. That should be more of a strength of the unit. But you're replacing one of the best running backs in BYU history. And last year, I don't think that the wide receiver core really crowned themselves with glory. It's been difficult for the last couple of years for lots of guys to be able to consistently achieve separation. That's a bigger problem when you don't have as good of an offensive line. Maybe that should help a little bit this year. But I don't know if anybody, even with the tight end group, which is being talked up a lot, I think, among BYU fans, there's nobody that I would look at and say, this is somebody who's a very strong bet to provide explosiveness. You know, you have some reason to think that there'll be some predictability or some, more consistent production. But you're not going to, if your only hope to score touchdowns is to dink and dunk on 13 play drives, you're not going to score a whole lot of points in that first month of the season. You need to be able to find some chunk plays. Does that come from Trinnaman? Is that something that you hope from Bushman? Is that something that you think is going to happen with Canada? It's all possible, but there's not a lot of blue chippers or even really high three-star guys in that group. There's a lot of, it's very unproven. I feel like that's really the biggest question mark on this whole team. Like, what are you going to, who's going to get the ball on 3rd and 11 and make a play? That, I think, remains to be seen for me.
Yeah. I think that makes everybody a little nervous. And unfortunately, outside of Portland State, they're not going to get much of a chance to find their footing against those three excellent defenses in September. Flipping to the other side of the ball, I think one of the things, as a longtime BYU fan, and longtime just meaning I'm old, is that there is always a tendency among the fans to kind of downplay the defense and worry a lot about how the offense is going to be. Part of that's BYU history. Part of that's just college football fans. It's more fun, if you will, to watch a high-octane offense than it is a shutdown defense. I look at this defense and I think, wow, BYU could steal some of these games against better teams because they've got a defense that's good enough to keep the score low and keep the game close, and then Mangum could win it with his arm in the fourth quarter. Is that crazy? As an outside observer, do you look at this defense and go, meh? Or do you look at this defense and go, no, that might be a top 25 unit or better?
Well, I'm not sure about the entire defense. I'm not sure exactly how fans feel about this now after the redshirt news, but I think there's a lot of reason to be excited about BYU's linebackers. And I think there's a little bit of depth there. You have guys who were not just, high-level recruits like the Warners, but, some other guys that, changed positions or been moved around and showed that they can be very consistent and reliable there. I think you're bringing back a pretty solid pass rusher. I think it's Takitaki or Sion, not to help me pronounce his name, but gentleman who missed last season, I think, is projected to come back, and that's important. I'm not sure exactly. I know that there's some reshuffling going on with who's going to be playing corner and who's going to be playing safety and who's going to be playing linebacker. And, given there's some depth chart issues from some of the higher level recruits that have come in, And it's nice to be able to have some depth of athletes where you can be flexible then. The issue for me, I think, is are you able to get a pass rush? Because that's really your defensive explosiveness situation. And that was something that you know, sometimes BYU did really, really well under Mendenhall, and sometimes against really good offensive lines over the last couple of years, they've struggled a little bit. And if you're able to provide that kind of a pass rush, that buys you a lot more flexibility within your secondary, especially if you're bringing in some younger guys. I look at this as probably the strength of this team and the situation that you're describing, especially in that first month, and really probably against the Mississippi State or Boise too, makes a lot of sense. Like when you're going against teams that don't have amazingly explosive offensive players, you have a bunch of really good linebackers who can tackle in space. If you can make a quarterback uncomfortable, get yourself in a situation where it's 17-10, 17-13 late in the third quarter, anything can happen because footballs are shaped funny and things bounce weird. And that's how you put yourself into position to win games against teams that have better players than you do. That certainly seems reasonable to me. It's not always compelling television, but I think BYU fans would trade a couple of slugfests if they were 20-13 BYU wins.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, let's pivot a little bit here and talk nationally. So if you look at, you know, the college football playoff has kind of restructured, at least for me and I think a lot of fans, how we think about the end of the year, right? So now it's really about those four spots. And then, you know, who knows if you get four good teams in a four-team tournament, anything can happen. But as you look out at next year, obviously Alabama, unless you're going to proclaim something differently, you got to assume Alabama's a likely spot in one of those spots. But after that, I see about 15 teams deep, Matt, that I think could all make legitimate claims to those spots. And I feel like it's more wide open than maybe it has been the last couple of seasons. Is that crazy, or do you think there really are 15, 16 teams that all have really legitimate shots at those four spots?
I don't know if it's 15 on paper right now, but it might be close. Like I'm with you. Like I'm happy to put Alabama in and marker. I feel like the difference between Alabama and the second or third best team in the SEC, which would be probably Auburn or LSU, is pretty significant. And the Tide could afford a loss and still make it in. I would be shocked if they weren't a playoff team. And then from there, you have, I think, a decent amount of parity in each of these power conferences. The difference, I think, might be the Pac-12, where I feel like it's USC and Washington who are very close together, and Stanford a little bit of a rung below them. But it's hard for me to see anybody else from that league really coming that close to being a playoff caliber team. There's a ton of parity in the Big 12 this year. There's like six teams I think could potentially win that conference. There's four that could win the Big 10. And the ACC probably a little bit less, maybe three, you know, Florida State, Clemson, Louisville, if Lamar Jackson just goes on fire and Louisville has figured out how to patch together an offensive line out of JUCO players and duct tape. But the races, I think, within the Big 12 and maybe what happens in the Big 10 are going to be pretty exciting. And if we look at history, generally there's somebody that's outside of that top 15 that ends up getting hot and making a run. You know, maybe that's a Kansas State this year, which I think that's a team that's built pretty well to win a lot of Big 12 football games. Maybe it's Stanford. You know, that's a team I think not a lot of people are talking about. Could be Oklahoma State, which might have the best passing game in the entire country. Like, there's plenty of reasons to be engaged if you're not a big fan of, like, one of the top eight blue bloods.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's – you mentioned Oklahoma State. They're one that I've looked at and go, man, with the schedule they have and the path, it's possible, though I think the Big 12, some of their strength of schedule is going to hurt some of those guys when the committees get together there towards the end. Is there any player that you look at this year and think that's the number one Heisman candidate by far, or do you think similarly – with some of the folks that we had leave for the NFL and such, that this is a wide open Heisman race that's really just going to be determined by who gets hot at the right time?
I think it's very wide open. You know, and that's weird to say considering we have the defending Heisman winner coming back. on what should be a pretty good team. Lamar Jackson really kind of solidified himself last year by just absolutely dunking on Florida State on national television early in the year, and then having a really solid October and kind of tapered off a little bit. Nobody else was there to catch him. I kind of think that maybe other teams in the ACC are going to catch up on that tape, and I'm a little bit worried about the rest of, you know, the rest of what surrounds him at Louisville. Although he's an outstanding player, he'll be in that conversation. The two guys that jump out to me right now as likely candidates would be Penn State running back Saquon Barkley, who is one of the best college running backs that I've seen in a long time, because he's good at every facet, I think, of football. He is a really strong pass blocker. He's one of the, like, you know, he's Leonard Fournette physically strong. He has a great burst when he gets to second level here. You know, he's tortured some really good Big Ten defenses, and he's going to be in an offense where he's not only going to get a lot of touches, but because of Trace McSorley's arm, defenses can't afford to stack the box because Penn State will just chuck the ball down the field 40 yards and burn you. So he's going to be able to put up a lot of stats. He's going to be on TV a lot of time. Same thing with Sam Darnold, who was absolutely excellent the last, you know, 8 or 9 games of the season for USC. That's a glamour program. They're going to be on TV all of the time. I don't really love, like, the middle of the Pac-12, so he could put up a ton of numbers. And that's a team that has, a more straightforward path, I think, to potentially making the playoff. So those two would be, like, the ones I think would be, like, your favorites. But, I mean, we could go down the list. There's probably 10 people on paper that make a lot of sense to me right now.
Yeah, for sure. I think this is going to be a fun year to watch on that. And I agree with you on Lamar. I kind of feel like he's got to win it. He would have to have an even better season, which than he had last year, because as Ty Detmer found out, having another really good season typically isn't enough after you've already won it once.
Yeah. There's a reason that only one person has repeated, because it's not only do you need to put up crazy numbers again. Your team has to be really successful. I did a research study on this for SB Nation a couple of weeks ago. You know, like teams that, like, you know, with Ty Detmer winning the Heisman for a team that went like 9-3 and finished like in the top 15, I think, that's a historical aberration. Typically, it's teams that are much higher. And is Louisville going to be in contention for a national title this year? I don't think so. You know, that would be unlikely. It also depends what happens with everywhere else. Because you might be an awesome team, and you might be very successful and a power, you know, fancier name that's 3 or 4 spots below you, that's a little bit fancier, could take away your thunder too. It is kind of a crapshoot, because a lot of it depends on stuff that's outside of your control.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly. And like you said, Lamar is Louisville is not a national championship contender this year, though you never know. So, well, Matt, thanks for coming on the show. We wanted to talk a little bit before we leave and say you are now, I mentioned this at the beginning, you are now a published author. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your book, which I think may appeal to our listeners?
I'd be happy to. So the name of the book is What If? A Closer Look at College Football's Great Questions. It's available on Amazon. It's available at a variety of independent booksellers, and you can get it on Kindle right now for a very Notre Dame-friendly price of $4.80. And I'll keep that sale going for one more week before the season starts, and I have to think of a new joke because Notre Dame should probably be pretty good. What this book does is it takes a look at some of the pivotal moments in college football history that really decided what programs are really powerful or who won the national title in a couple of years, and explores how things might have been a little bit different had that coin flipped a slightly different way. Because a lot of these major pivotal moments were much closer to chance, I think, than maybe some fans recognize. And, there's questions that delve into college football programs across the country. You know, there's some Big Ten questions, there's some Pac-12 questions, there's some SEC questions that we have scenarios from 2007. UAB tried to hire Jimbo Fisher, and the University of Alabama told them no. And then, you know, they got stuck with like Neil Callaway, and the program ended up going away. That potentially changed the national title. And there's also some stuff from like 1920. You know, when Michigan got kicked out of the Big Ten for cheating. Well, you know, what would have happened if they hadn't come back? That changes the trajectory of everything. And there's one chapter that I think many fans here may be interested in. It takes a look at what would have happened if Lavelle Edwards had left BYU specifically to take the Miami job. Like, I think a lot of BYU fans are aware of Edwards entertaining an offer from the Detroit Lions. I think this was after the national championship season before eventually turning that down. But a lot of schools tried to hire him. Minnesota made a run at him in the 80s. Missouri tried to interview him. Stanford made a few phone calls. And the most interesting one to me is with the Miami Hurricanes, because they reached out before they ended up hiring Schnellenberger. And this, I guess I'll have to check the exact date. So in the late 70s. And Miami was a horrible job back then. Like, right now you think about, oh my gosh, like that's, you know, you're in the recruiting hotbed. You're in a program that's competing for national titles. Miami's a cool town. Like, of course it should be able to, you know, retain a top level coach. But in the late 70s, they were considering dropping the program entirely. You know, South Florida wasn't the population and recruiting hotbed then that it was now. And they had an apathetic fan base and some institutional struggles. And that's why Edwards eventually turned down the job. He's like, well, you know, quintupling my salary would be nice, but you know, coaching somewhere with that kind of institutional pressure isn't attractive to me. I actually like Provo. Provo is a little bit of a different place than Coral Gables.
Yeah, a little bit.
Just a little bit. But, you know, if that had happened, not only does that change BYU's national title, I don't think it's a stretch to say that probably doesn't happen, because they were a little bit lucky to get there to begin with. But it also changes the 1980s Miami Hurricane programs, because under Schnellenberger, I think they became really one of the most influential culturally college football teams, right? Like, this is the U. These are the guys coming in camel fatigues off the plane and being very expressive and kind of in your face and maybe a teensy little bit dirty. Does that Miami program happen if it's being run by a conservative, you know, dude from Utah? I don't think so.
I would say definitely that I can't see that going the same direction.
Yeah, you're looking at more of an NC State kind of situation. So, you know, I'm thinking that's probably better for college football, period. You know, BYU gets a national title and gets one of the most schematically influential coaches ever. Like, in my neck of the woods, you know, I wrote about this for SB Nation a little bit too. I think the Lavelle Edwards legacy just on the football field is probably underrated. It really is impressive. And what he was able to accomplish at BYU, given where BYU was. And if you think that's fascinating, there's 12 other chapters just like it. It may be something that if you're a big college football fan, it may be up your alley.
Cool. Well, we will encourage everybody to go to Amazon and check out What If, A Closer Look at College Football's Great Questions by Matt Brown. And Matt, as always, thanks for coming on the show. We'll also encourage people to check out your stuff on SB Nation.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Matt, you know, last week on the podcast, we did not celebrate episode 290. We didn't even mention that we were at episode 290. Is that a milestone?
I was going to ask you, if it is a milestone, I mean, is there like a precious metal or a mineral we're supposed to be exchanging?
I believe it's the quartzite.
Quartzite, huh?
I just made that up. I have no idea.
Well, I happen to have some quartzite in a satchel over here.
In a
Sounds
satchel?
Like Of course, that sounds like something you'd carry in a satchel, doesn't it?
Is it by your, you know, are you going to put it on your horse in the morning?
I carry it in the pocket in my cloak.
Oh, in your cloak. Of course you do. Of course you have a pocket in your cloak.
Everybody isn't this something to buy at like the Renaissance Fair? All of these things sound like that's where they belong.
Are you making
fun? I don't know. I've never been to one. I'm not making fun. I'm just saying this this sounds like.
You should go to a Renaissance Fair. If nothing else, the comedic value is off the charts.
I feel like it would be those ESPN fantasy football commercials where they're like, this is bad fantasy. You seen those?
Yes, yes.
They're charging in a battle and they're like, yes. What's his face? Is it the podiatrist?
Yeah.
This isn't a real falcon. Like, anyway, it's funny stuff.
Yeah. It's kind of like that. I've been to a couple times. It's not my jam, as the kids say.
It's not your jam.
Yeah, as the kids say.
I'm not sure what kids you're talking about.
Kids at some point in history have said that, right? No?
Sure they did.
I've been. You should go. I can't believe we're talking about Renaissance fairs.
I'm sorry. I apologize, everybody. I don't know where that came from.
So Matt, you and Andre Hutchins have put aside your pretend internet squabble. It has been put aside.
Temporarily.
Whoa. Are you already calling him out for after the LSU game?
I'm not promising anything. I'm not promising once the LSU game's over.
Well, he used one of the greatest gifts of all time, which is which is Macho Man Savage and Hulk Hogan shaking hands.
Macho Randy Man?
Sorry.
That's what you just said.
I know.
You said Macho.
I know what I said, you idiot.
But do you know what it means? Anyway, yeah, it was a great gift. Great gift.
And I think to consider
myself Hulk Hogan in that scenario.
No way. You are totally the Macho Man.
Nah, I don't know. I guess we'll have to find out. I guess we need Andre to tell us. Maybe I should tweet that at him and ask him which one he thinks is him.
Yeah, I think you're, because you talk crazy. 7-2 Slim Jim! I mean, you're about to do Cougars in the News right here. It sounds just like Randy, the Macho Man Savage. So let's do the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
See, you're the Macho Man. You're not Hulk Hogan.
No, I think that it would be more like Cougars in the News, man. That was terrible.
Both of us failed.
It was a lot better. I practiced it earlier. It was a lot better. I apologize, everybody.
We failed on our Macho Man. And I grew up watching him. Elizabeth.
Oh, I loved it. Elizabeth is in the background of that gift. Yeah,
George the Animal Steel.
Oh, those were the glory days.
Glory days of professional wrestling when men were men.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Matt, women's soccer lost their opener. Wait a second. They're playing right now, aren't they?
Is that on right now as we record?
I think they're probably done by now. They clash with Buckeyes for their home opener. It's tied 0-0 to OT. Two overtimes.
Wow.
That's what's happening right now. Live stats. I'm looking
live updates, which will no longer be live by the time anybody listens to this.
Yes. Very final 0-0. It's a tie. So they lost their opener to Penn State 3-1, and then have now tied with Ohio State. Not probably the start to the season that the women's soccer team was looking for, but two quality opponents to start off the year. Something I think they can build on. Matt, let's talk about Cougars in the pros. With the first pick in the NFL draft.
Ooh, sit down, Goodell.
The Sacramento Kings select. I know they don't play in the NFL before we get angry tweets. They're just terrible. Matt, Taysom doing Taysom things.
What a boy.
If you have not seen the video of Taysom
Hill. Where have
Hill,
you been?
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, were you under a rock right now?
You don't have social media, and you probably don't care about BYU. So I don't know why you're even listening to this podcast if you haven't seen that video. Taysom scored a touchdown, had another really good run, but that touchdown that has everybody talking is him juking defenders and then stiff-arming a guy on his way into the end zone. And my favorite part, Matt, is the massive smile on Taysom's face in every single photograph that captured the moment.
He seems to be enjoying himself, doesn't he?
Okay, so after the everyone being excited about this, everyone's talking about him being the backup, he's the number two to Aaron Rodgers. Let's slow it down a little bit, guys. He still may not make this roster. Okay?
Whoa, wet towel.
I'm just
pumping
saying.
The brakes a little hard there, Adam. Jeez.
No, I'm not. That's proper pumping the brakes.
Yeah, I ran this 25-yard touchdown run. Picked up the first down on 4th-and-2. It's Taysom back in action, man. This is great. And by the way, he might not actually make the team. That's basically what you just did.
Yes, because those are all facts. I'm a fact-based guy.
Wow, Debbie Downer alert, everybody.
I'm not being a Debbie Downer.
I'd like to welcome Debbie Downer to the podcast. Hey, thanks for being here tonight, Debbie.
Let's go back 6 months, okay? If I had told you 6 months ago that Taysom was going to be in camp and running for a touchdown in the NFL preseason, would you have even believed that?
Yes. I'm going to say that now because I believe in revisionist history.
You and I talked
about this before the
draft.
I've believed in him all along.
We said, both of us said he would not even make a roster at the 90 man. And he's on the 90 man.
But the roster cuts are weird this year because they're basically going to cut everybody at the end, which is going to be total chaos.
Oh, my gosh. You're ridiculous. Anyway. So anyway, I think his performance greatly increases his chances. But I still think it's tough because he hasn't really played that much in the preseason. Right? So, you know, he's not getting second team snaps today. I'm just saying. But it was awesome to see him doing what Taysom does. And obviously not sliding. At the 10
yard
line.
I think one of the announcers said, most quarterbacks in the NFL would have slid right about here.
Yeah, yeah. Not Taysom Hill.
No.
He did that for about 3 weeks last season. Remember that?
And it was, and he hated it. You could tell he hated it.
We all hated it. It's like basically, let's take the most impressive part of his game and not do it.
But I'll say this. He looked pretty good throwing the football.
He did look good. He looked solid.
He looked very accurate, smooth. You know, it just anyway, that for me, that's the most impressive part because I feel like that was the question mark.
Yeah, everybody
we knew
really
he could run. Look at his numbers. He basically put up the same. He puts up the same skill numbers as Christian McCaffrey, right? I mean, he's an athlete, but yeah. The question has always been, can he throw the football, you know, and hit those, you know, NFL routes?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they haven't asked him to throw a lot of deep stuff, which, of course, in college was a little bit of his Achilles heel. Matt, in that same game, Jamal Williams has another pretty rough day running the football, but that was true besides Taysom Hill for the Green Bay Packers in general and has been kind of a theme for them in the preseason. Are you at all, Jamal's running with the ones and twos, are you at all worried about Jamal Williams' role with the 2017 Packers?
No, Jamal Williams, I mean, I don't think there's any issue with whether or not he makes the team. I think that it's going to be about the way we've predicted. He's going to show up. He's going to get some carries. I think I don't know where you are now, but you've historically been pretty high on his chances to break in and possibly become the feature back, right?
He will be the leading, get the most carries this year for the Packers. That's been my prediction.
So, and I believe he'll be a meaningful contributor. I don't know if I'm going to go quite as far as you, but I'm not concerned.
Oh, Debbie Downer. Debbie
Downer.
I
said the guy might,
what,
you're like ready to put the guy in the Pro Bowl, and I'm like, you know, hey, you know, he might not lead the team in carries.
Pro Bowl.
And now I'm Debbie Downer.
Pro Bowl. I'm putting him in the NFL Hall of Fame. Welcome to Canton, Jamal Williams.
Oh my gosh. He's already commissioned his bust.
Yeah.
So I'm not worried about it. I mean, it's just preseason and they're working out kinks and he's a rookie. So it is what it is.
Okay.
Jamal's gonna be just fine.
All right. Cool.
I'll start worrying about Jamal when he stops dancing, because then that means he's worried.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, he's clearly in the zone with the pregame or pre-kickoff dance routines. Matt, on Facebook, we have our first tweet bag question.
Tweet bag.
I'm all over the place already. First bag question. Don't worry. You know what this means?
There it is.
Dr. Pepper time, folks.
You're not you. You're not you when you're hungry. There we go.
All right, here we go. Johnny Ashton on Facebook asks, he needs fantasy football advice. Well, you've come to the wrong people.
No,
we'll give it anyway.
Yeah, you sure have.
Which Cougar are you most likely to draft for your need more.
Need to take another sip. Take another sip of the elixir there, Adam.
Here
you're
we go.
Clearly not ready.
That's good. All right. Which Cougar are you most likely to draft for your fantasy football team? Jamal Williams, Ziggy, meaning the Lions D, Vannoy and Longy, who, by the way, looked terrific this weekend for the Patriots, or Daniel Sorensen and Chiefs D? Are any of them worth reaching for based on projected draft position? Matt, are you drafting any of who he mentioned, Jamal, Lions D, Patriots D, or Chiefs D?
See, what's disappointing about this, Adam, is that you and I are in a fantasy league. So by answering this question, I'm going to give away some of my strategy, right? But Yeah, I know. But listen, here, generally speaking, I don't draft defenses.
You let the defense come to you.
Let the defense come to you, and you're going to be swapping that stuff around. anyway off the waiver wire. I mean, depending on the way your league is set up, you're probably not going to spend a draft pick on that, at least until maybe late. You know, maybe you want to pick one up late. But in our league, the Patriots D, as one might expect, usually goes early. But off this list, that's the one I would take. Jamal's a little bit of a reach for me to use a fantasy roster spot on him. Because, I think that, I just
somebody in our league
will draft. Somebody in our league will pick him up. Somebody in our league will draft the Lions defense for Ziggy. Somebody in our league will draft all of these things.
Yes.
And if I get my hands on the Patriots defense, I mean, that's like, in our league, that's like the golden egg, right? You've got Van Noy and Longy, and it's the Patriots. Hello.
So from a just general standpoint, and if you were in a league without a bunch of BYU and New England Patriot homers, I would say the two on this list are Jamal, depending on how deep your league is, and the Patriots D. I'm not particularly interested in the Chiefs D today compared to where they're being drafted. That's what I'm saying. Not that, because he asked if you'd reach for them.
I wouldn't reach for any of them. I'd pick up Jamal late in the draft if you feel good about the rest of your roster and you want to take a flyer on a guy who could become a contributor later in the season. That's one of those picks that could pay off for you, a couple months down the road.
Yeah.
If you feel like he's going to overtake the number one spot there and do some things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's if you're not a BYU fan, that's when you pick up a Jamal Williams.
Yeah. So, Matt, you've been running a lot.
I sure have.
So tell us about Saturday. You ran for, I might get this wrong, but I believe it was like 85 miles on Saturday.
85, you've overestimated just a little bit.
Okay.
But math is hard.
Math is hard. So is talking.
I ran, so on Saturday last week, it was the longest single run of my entire life. I ran 16 miles, and that wrapped up a week where I ran 40 miles. So that was also the most miles I've ever run in a single week. The running has been a ton of fun. I'm tired and hungry all the time.
You're like a baby. You're tired and hungry all the time. I got newborn.
Yeah, that's probably a pretty good comparison. There's a lot of random crying.
You're losing
control of bodily functions. So, anyway, this has come off the rails, hasn't it? The transition for me that has been interesting is doing this running for something other than me. So I started to run in order to lose weight. So for me, the running has been a lot about, taking care of myself. And what I found, especially this past week and a half or so, where I've had some tough runs, is it has changed for me a little bit, the feeling when I'm out there and the motivation to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and put my shoes on and get out there when I think about doing this for something other than me. So for that, this has been a really good experience. And for those of you who have been listening to the podcast, you're aware that I'm training for the New York City Marathon with all this running in order to raise funds for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention in memory of our older brother, who we lost to suicide 25 years ago this fall. So thinking about him and families like ours that have been impacted by this, and people that you and I know who are working through issues related to this, and so it's been really interesting for me to see how that's impacted and inspired my running. And I've started an Instagram account that's at Matt's Running, and I do appreciate we've had a couple of listeners make contributions. And so I really do appreciate the support. And I think there will be a link in the show notes if anybody wants to participate in some of that fundraising. We've got about $2,400 left to go to meet the goal. And we have till October 30th. So there's still time.
Awesome. Thanks, Matt. Well, we're going to skip past basketball today, because who cares about basketball, and go straight to football. So, Matt, what I didn't think we'd be discussing today is Francis Bernard not being part of the team.
Did not see this one coming.
Now, we're not going to spend a lot of time here because I think everybody over the last few days as a BYU fan has probably spent too much time here, okay? But let's follow the timeline a little bit. Story breaks that Bernard is transferring, okay? He's redshirting, actually, is what the first story was. Then friend of the podcast, Jay Drew, now public enemy number one for some BYU fans, writes a story using Bernard's brother as the source that he's transferring to Utah. But then it comes back that he's not leaving. is what the BYU sports information team says. And then defensive coordinator, Mr. Tuiaki, says, no, actually he is transferring. He just doesn't know where. And then BYU football spokesperson after Tuiaki's interview on his own radio show says, no decision has been made at this point. I don't even know what to make of this. I mean, besides all the stuff that we are not going to discuss, which is why any of this went down and what actually happened, not interested in discussing. You in agreement on that?
It's none of our business.
Yeah, I'm not interested, and I'm not going to get pulled into that. But Matt, this is a little bizarre. The week of the first game, obviously, when somebody's leaving the program for whatever reason, it's bizarre. But this one is, I think, a little bit more bizarre than usual because I have no idea what's going to happen.
Well, I don't know that. It seems to me, from what I've gathered, is I don't know that anybody's really sure. I think that Coach Satake was pretty clear in the comments I saw him make, where he said, you know, he's got Francis Bernard's got a decision to make, and we're going to support him in making that decision and doing what's right for him. So maybe, I mean, it sounds like he's got a decision, and maybe he hasn't decided what he wants to do. And it's unfortunate that this stuff kind of trickles out. And I think there's, you know, people want to know, people want to talk about it, people want to understand what the implication of the team is. So I understand why it becomes a topic of conversation this way, and why people go looking, trying to talk to family members and people close to them to figure out what's going on, because people want to know. But it seems to me like there's not a final decision been made. I think he's clearly leaning towards leaving BYU and going somewhere else. But yeah. I don't know that any of that's official until it's official. You know what I mean?
Well, and this becomes a bigger story because the school that's being thrown out is the University of Utah, right? If somebody came out and said he was transferring to Oregon State, if that had been the news story, it's still a big deal because he's a starter and an important cog to that defense. We'll get to the football impact here in a second. But it's not the same, you know, story. If he's transferring to Oregon State or, pick other school besides Utah, right? And I really don't care about, I don't want to know the why, and I don't need to know those details. Like I said, it's really none of my business, and that's between him and the school and whatever else that's going on. It is a little bit of a circus. I'm glad it seems like the coaching staff is trying to take it head on, which is great. But it is a little bit, the timing is unfortunate for the team and certainly for Francis. And we wish him as two fans the best wherever he goes. We've said this every time somebody transfers, we wish him good luck wherever they end up. And he's an excellent player, and I think he'll be an excellent player someplace else if that's the decision he makes.
And I think I just want to reiterate, we've talked about this before, but in terms of what the rules and things should be, I mean, if he's at a point on the BYU schedule where he can withdraw from classes like any other student could, and he chooses a school where he could still enroll for this semester, he should be allowed to do so without penalty. And he should be allowed to do so regardless of what the BYU coaching staff thinks. And because I've preached this over and over and over again, and I want to make it real clear in this particular case, because I think this makes the point. This really makes the point. If Francis Bernard decides tomorrow that he wants to transfer to the University of Utah, and the University of Utah, I have no idea when their classes start or when their drop deadlines are, but I would imagine he'd still be in the window where he could go and enroll if he qualifies. Yes. And they accept him into the school.
Right.
Then he should be allowed to do so immediately. And he should be allowed to play. So, and as much as that, you know, and we'll deal with this in a second, I think, with one of the tweet bag questions. As uncomfortable as that may feel, the student athletes should have all of those same freedoms. And even though in this particular situation it sounds like it would hurt, I'm sticking to my guns on my philosophy on that.
I completely agree. And when people – well, we'll get to this in a second. Okay. So I'll skip my thought on that. Let's talk about implications for the defense, Matt. Great question from Clark early on Twitter. That's at CL Early 33. Hashtag, by the way, he uses a lot of hashtags here. Will Butch Powell and Fred Warner be negatively affected by Bernard's red shirt and or departure? And how? Hashtag tweetbag. Hashtag go go Pau Ranger. Hashtag Pau Rice Ranger. Shout. Hashtag
go Goku's. Go Pau Ranger.
Well done.
That's
Clark.
Pretty good. Is that new? Has that been around Pau. And I just have missed it?
I don't know. I may have missed it. I don't know if this is a new thing, a Clark thing, or an old thing.
No, Clark.
That's an excellent question. Matt, I'll take first crack at this one. Yes, it will negatively affect them. The question is really how much depends on how well folks like Adam Pulsifer and Isaiah Calfusi play in the spot where Bernard would be playing. But it does. I mean, Bernard had a very good year last year. I've got to say yes.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think that you go with this next man up philosophy, right? But I think you've got to step down. And there's a little bit of a step down, I believe, in talent there, at least at the beginning of the season until we have a little bit more information to go off of. But this will allow teams to treat Fred Warner and Butch Powell a little bit differently because there's not that third cog in that linebacker core. And so, we talked a little bit last week about how teams will scheme for Fred Warner and then Butch Powell can come in there and clean up the tackles. And, and theoretically, I think that works well. I think that works better for Butch Powell if there's Francis Bernard there as well. I think without Francis Bernard, it gives opportunities to offenses to scheme a little bit to try and neutralize these two some. So, yeah, there's going to be some negative effect. How bad? I don't know. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, we will definitely see, and probably not in this first game. Portland State, I don't know that we'll feel
you don't think that
until
Portland State's going to expose all of our weaknesses?
No, probably not. But we'll
I don't
want to
get – that's right. I'm getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, don't jump the gun there, buddy. Justin Sweeney has our next
Sweeney.
Tweet question. That's at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter. He says, how much of our playbook will Bernard leak to Ute coaches when he transfers there? Hashtag tweetbag. Here's the thing. People transfer. In the NFL, people trade teams. I'm not worried about
it. Well, the answer is 100% of what he remembers.
Yeah. I'm not worried about it. If that's not going to be a factor in that game, even if he transfers.
When you think about the level of film and scouting that these teams do, the incremental amount of information that Francis Bernard would have to offer – trick plays, anything that the coaches have talked about specifically for the Utah game and that type of information. So, I mean, it's not like the entire BYU playbook is a secret mystery under lock and key to which the Utah coaches have never been exposed, right? So,
well, and how much prep have they done for Utah?
Right. If there's some gimmicky something they've been working on over the summer or some
possible
general approach. I mean, but really, I mean, we didn't even know who the starting quarterback in the University of Utah was until today. So, you know, how much defensive scheming was out there for him to know or be able to leak in the event that that's even what ends up happening? The impact of that is, I don't know. But it'll be 100% of what he knows.
It'll be 100% of what he can remember.
Yep.
So, Matt, let's preview a football game. Portland State.
Yeah.
The Vikings. The Vikings of Portland State.
So awesome. I've been to Portland once for a job interview. It was quite nice.
Is Portland State even in Portland?
I don't know.
I'm just saying. I don't know. Do you know anything about it?
Do I know anything about Portland State?
Yeah.
You asking me if I know about Oregon's Public Urban Research University located in the heart of downtown? That's ranked as one of the nation's top most innovated universities by...
Oh my gosh. You're reading the website.
No, I'm not. I'm reading Google search results.
Oh, okay. Good enough. So Matt, Portland State last year, we talked a little bit about this before, was not particularly good. Okay? So their final record was 3-8. They did lose to some good teams. Washington, 41-3. They lost to, that was it. That's the only good team they lost to. Anyway, they beat UC Davis, Idaho State, and Central Washington last year. They're not good. Okay? So we can go there with that. Do you anything else you want to say about Portland State before we talk about the Cougars?
Well, I think it's a cool opportunity. I mean, you look at that, and they've got an interesting schedule. I mean, they're playing us and Oregon State.
Yeah, they're going all out.
They're not messing around.
And then hit their FCS schedule after that.
How cool would this be if you were a Portland State player to get to open up your season on ESPN? I mean, that's pretty cool.
And you know, they're playing in two pretty cool college environments in Provo and where's Oregon State play? I can't think of it right now. Anyway,
Oregon,
you know what I'm saying. The state of Oregon.
And then they're right there, though. They're right. They're like across the street. It's in Portland.
Oregon State's not in Portland.
It's near there.
Okay. Now I feel better about myself. Thank you for helping me feel better about myself.
Wait, are you serious right now?
I am serious. You just said that Oregon State's in Portland.
It's in Corvallis, which is like...
Yeah, Corvallis. It's not Portland. People in Corvallis are like screaming at you right now. None of them who listen to this podcast, they're very upset with you. I know it's not that far, but Corvallis, and I have been there. They're kind of rural. They're kind of, you know what I mean? They're like, Corvallis is, you know, it's the ag school, you know, it's the technical school. They're not part of those Portland hippies, Corvallis. I'm serious. That's how I've known a few Oregon State folks. They like, and I like Corvallis. It's beautiful. Have you been to Corvallis?
I've not been to Corvallis. I went to Portland for a job interview a long time ago. Yeah. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's a pretty part of the country. Anyway, so Portland State, don't need to talk about them anymore. Matt, couple tweet bag questions.
Tweet bag.
So during the eclipse, did Punxsutawney Phil see his shadow? Asked Jared Roundsville on Twitter at J Roundsville. I don't know if Punxsutawney Phil comes out for you know, eclipses.
Everybody comes out for the eclipse, Adam.
Did he wear protective glasses?
I hope so, or else he's definitely not going to see his shadow next year.
Can I tell you a secret?
What?
I looked straight at it.
Oh, you're such a rebel.
I am such a rebel without glasses on. What?
I was in a meeting and somebody came
away fast.
I had no intention of. I didn't have any time to participate, and I was in a meeting, a small meeting, and somebody popped their head in. And they said, "Hey, you only got a couple more minutes. If you want to come see this, we've got some glasses." So I said, "Okay, I'll step outside real quick." So I step outside. I put the glasses on. I look up. I'm like, "Okay, yeah, that's pretty cool." And then I'm coming back inside. And as I walked back inside, I grabbed my eyes and dropped to my knees. Oh, my God. Oh, those glasses you gave me. And everybody was kind of like, wait a minute, what? I'm just kidding.
They're fake glasses.
Just kidding. I'm good. Happy eclipse day, everybody.
So Gary Payne, that's at FastBreakGP on Twitter, asked this. What one extra thing do you look for in Portland State game beyond the normal stuff? Kind of beyond points, tackles, yards, etc. Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag painbag. Gary, you're in for a treat. We're going to give you three things we're looking for. All right? So, Matt, you go first.
Are we going back and forth? Like, I just give
we're
one of my
back
things?
Back and forth. All right. Like a draft.
All right. So, what I want to see is I want to see receivers comfortable with the offense. I want to see communication between the quarterback and the receivers that indicates that they're on the same page in terms of where the receiver is supposed to be when the ball arrives. Are they looking over the right shoulder? Are they turning in the right places? And are they, when they're communicating at the line of scrimmage, are they all on the same page? I think this is a perfect place to see it, because I don't know that this Portland State defense is going to be especially stout. So it's really just going to be about, do these receivers understand what they're supposed to be doing?
I want to see fundamentals. That's what I want to see. Good tackling, to your point, good route running, a level of comfort with the offense for all of the position players. I just want to see crisp fundamental football. All right, back to you. What's the second thing you want to see?
I'd like to see our defensive backfield shut some guys down. You know, we've talked about that a little bit, and you know, we've talked about where there's some talent at the corner and some places. But I think in a game like this, we really ought to be able to showcase their ability to get it done.
Like you want to see Diane Gonwoloku play well?
Yeah.
Did you see that?
But you've been practicing, I can tell.
Gonwoloku.
You've been saying that in the mirror every morning, haven't you?
I have been, because it was kind of embarrassing last week, I'll be honest.
Kind of embarrassing?
Okay. So I got it. It's really not that hard. Matt, my second thing is I want to see them, especially against a lesser team, be able to generate a pass rush with zero blitzing. Won't mean that we can against stiffer competition, but certainly if we can't, that's a bad sign. So I want to see some pressure generated with just the four-man front. All right, third thing for you.
You took my third thing, so I'm going to go with my spare. And my spare was, I'm interested to see who gets all the carries. Who are we going to be handing the ball to? Who
are
we
working out?
And then trying to look at that to determine, are we giving this guy the carries to test this guy out, or are we giving this guy the carries because he's going to be getting all the carries? But it's Squally, right? I mean, it's Squally Canada, isn't it?
We think so. We think so, but I don't know. I think it's going to be by committee, at least to a certain extent. My third thing is, isn't something to watch for, but I think it's just, it's a tough deal for the coaches. And so I'll just use our next TweetBag question to introduce my point. Ramsey Cox, that at Ramsey Cox on Twitter, says, how much of this game do you feel the starters will actually play in preparation before LSU? Matt, this is a tough one. This game against an FCS opponent usually comes sometime later in the schedule, right? Not the first game. So later in the schedule, where I'm always say play them as little as possible to avoid injury, right? But in this game, I think they got to play at least a half. Just because that's the benefit of this game's placement in the schedule. But I don't know if you go much beyond the half, because I don't know how much that many plays will help them prepare. Agree or disagree?
I think they all come out and have to start the third quarter. And at that point, you start kind of shutting it down. But you're going to have to gauge it a little bit. You know, you've got a lot of youth at some really key positions.
Very true.
And you're going to be going live against a team that's not familiar with you. So you have to take advantage of that on some level and try and create some opportunities for these guys to get familiar with what it is you're asking them to do.
Yeah.
I don't know what the, you know, where do you draw that line? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think you're right, Matt. It's a tough line to draw. I mean, I've been one in the past who wanted to pull them after one quarter in these FCS games. Right? Like, I didn't want to see Taysom or Tanner or any of our QBs get hurt, and I certainly didn't want some of our top defensive players or offensive linemen to get hurt in these games. And I feel like those are the positions where it's likely something could go wrong, just because, you know, as we've seen against some of these FCS opponents, they're just like, there's a massive talent gap, right? And size gap. But this one with those big games we got coming, I think they got to have at least a half, and I think they will. And I think you're right. I think it's very likely that the starters are playing in the first series or two in the third quarter, just to get their legs under them in a game situation after halftime.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
There's some value there. So Matt, we're both predicting a massive win, right?
Yeah, it's not even close.
So let's do our thing, Matt.
Oh, we're doing the thing?
The whole season right now.
Oh, man. So are we doing scores or just win-loss?
We're just doing win-loss.
Okay, good, because I am not prepared to do scores.
We're not that good. But what's your score on Saturday?
56-7.
I'm doing 49-3. 49-3. And I used a lot of science to come up with that.
I used very simple arithmetic.
Of science. Lots of it. So, Matt, we're both, of course, predicting a Portland State victory. Let's go through, and this first game against LSU, we actually have a question about that, so we'll get to that here in a second. Matt, who you got? You big, stinking LSU homer in that first game.
I'm going with LSU on this one.
I'm just really disappointed in you.
This is going to be a tough game.
Yeah, you think? Yeah, it's going to be a bit of a tough game. LSU wins this one, I think. I think that's pretty straightforward. But Matt, interesting question from your rival, not rival, Andre Hutchins.
What does Andre have to say?
At @AC_Hutchins, he asked this. Predict the score if BYU loses to LSU, and predict the score if BYU wins. Matt, what's your just gut reaction? What's the score in that game?
21-3.
21-3. I've got 28-10 if they lose. If they were to pull this out and be one of the greatest BYU victories, I think, maybe ever, could be on that top 10 list. Beating LSU on a neutral site that happens to be much closer to their home turf. What's the score going to be?
If BYU were to win this game, the score is 14-13.
I was going to say 17-14. So we're pretty close in both those instances. I think they would have to keep this to a low-scoring game to make it work.
Yes. I think that if BYU can score two touchdowns against this team, that's going to offensively, that's going to put them in the best situation they can. I mean, defensively, it's all going to come down to whether or not if we can get a good pass rush on them. And we'll do a full analysis, I guess, next week. But
yeah,
we'd have to do some things to create some opportunity. But
yeah,
it's going to be a fun game. I'm looking forward to being there.
Yeah, we gotta keep the listeners coming back for next week. If we preview it, then they're gonna be like, I don't need a preview. Come back next week for your preview. So Matt, Utah, win or loss?
I'm going with a win.
Going with a win. All right. And I am going with a loss. No, I'm just kidding. They're totally going to beat Utah, just like Dick Carmen said. Matt, Wisconsin.
Loss.
I agree with you, even in Provo. Though, part of me wants to pick that as a win. Utah State.
Win.
Utah State's not going to be very good. Boise State in Provo.
Loss.
You are such a hater. Win for the Cougars. Mississippi State on the road.
Loss.
Wow. You hate the Cougars. I also am going to say loss. East Carolina.
It's a win in Greenville.
It's a win in Greenville. San Jose. Okay, the rest of them are wins.
Yeah, the rest of them are wins.
All right. So, you realize what that means. We are both predicting 9-win seasons pre-bowl game. We're just swip-swapping? I mean, something's wrong here.
That's not.
I had them winning one more.
You had them winning Mississippi State.
No, Boise State.
Oh, Boise State was where we disagreed.
Something's
okay.
Wrong with my math.
Shocker.
I have them winning 10 games.
Right. You've got a 10-win season. I have a 9-win season.
Yes. And you're wrong.
I feel pretty good about the 9 wins. I might be wrong about who they are.
But you feel good about the 9 wins, that it's going to be a 9-win season.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a 10-win season. I think we beat Utah or Wisconsin. And I think we beat Boise State.
I believe we beat Utah or Wisconsin.
And you don't believe we beat Boise State?
No.
I don't think Boise's that good. And it's in Provo.
Yeah,
I'm just having a hard time picking Boise in that one. In Provo. If it was in Boise, I'd feel differently. But I'm having a hard time picking what might be a good but not really good Boise State team in Provo. Now, the question is, Matt, are they just worn out?
That's kind of where I'm at. I mean, this is a gauntlet.
But Utah State will kind of be a, not a week off. But
no, we keep saying that. Playing. We say that every year. It is not a week off. Those guys
oh my gosh,
come in there for blood.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's
stop
in Logan.
That is not true. They do not come in there for blood. What are you even talking about? We won 28-10 last year. Not exactly in for blood. 2 years ago, we won 51-28. Not in it for blood. They're not good anymore. They're just not good. They could be a bottom feeder team this year. They were good a few years ago, but they're not good anymore.
Yeah, I'm not worried about losing to Utah State. I'm just worried about the condition that we show up to the Boise State game in.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, the LSU, Utah, Wisconsin 3 weeks in a row, that is going to test our depth to no end.
Oh, I mean, who is playing a schedule like this?
That early? Almost nobody.
Nobody's doing it that early. And, you know, somebody who plays in the Big Ten, you know, might have a gauntlet like that. Somebody in the SEC plays a gauntlet like that. I don't know that anybody in the Pac-12 does.
I don't know either. It depends on where their games line up. I think there are a few that have three-week deals like that, but usually later on in the season, you know, it's going to be tough. But,
yeah,
but
not in
Matt,
September.
Success equals how many wins this year? Got to be 9, right?
You got to win 9 games.
Schedule. You got to win 9 games. Special is 11 regular season wins?
Yes. 11 is special.
Special is 11. 10 is obviously better than 9, but not crazy special.
I think 10 is overachieving.
10 is overachieving. 11 is, you're ranked, right?
Yeah.
Because that means you beat 2 good teams.
Right.
And obviously, if one of those 11 wins is LSU or Wisconsin, but you drop 2 games elsewhere, that changes a little bit, right?
Right.
What the 11 feels like.
Let's say you only lose the LSU and Wisconsin games. At the end of the season, you're probably ranked.
Well, I mean, yeah, your only two losses could be to top 10 teams.
Right.
So that's pretty good.
Potential playoff contenders at that point.
Potential playoff contenders, depending on how well they play. Well, Matt, on Saturday, we have a football game.
Oh, it's going to be so awesome.
It's going to be good, a real football game. We will be back next week to talk about what we learned and also to preview LSU. Matt, should we do a Facebook halftime show?
Oh, we should. The Facebook halftime show is back.
It's back. So check us out. Go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/riseandshout at halftime. Usually we're a couple minutes after halftime starts. We will commentate, one of us, on what's happening in the show. I think it's got to be you because I'm going to have to do the LSU one because you're actually at the game.
Yeah,
unless you're going to do the halftime show in the stadium.
I think that's when I'm going to be setting aside the beef.
No, that's
I don't
right.
know. We haven't decided when we're going to do that. We got to figure out if he's going to be at the tailgate or what we're going to do. But halftime is actually a terrible time to try and find somebody.
True, but regardless, probably not the time for you to do that halftime show.
No.
So anyway, well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. We really appreciate everybody that participated in the survey. We got excellent survey results back, and we will be acting on that stuff and really appreciate everyone's feedback on the show. As I said, I mentioned our Facebook page. You can also check us out on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. And check out this show and other great podcasts at DeseretNews.com/podcasts. Matt, any parting words?
Let's get it on.
Ready for some football, right?
Yep.
Let's do it. Let's do it, Tanner Mangum. Let's do it, Butch Powell Ranger.
That's awesome.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors. We'll catch you next time.
Go Cougars.